Welcome to the pre-round two Supercoach Coach podcast. I'm Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
Ahoy, boys. Happy birthday, Marcus.
Thank you. And Dunny, first time on the show for the season. Great to have you on, mate.
Thanks, Marcus. Great to be here, and great to see Mark as well.
Haven't seen you both together in a bit of time. How was your first week of Supercoach for 2022, Dunny?
Not bad. I thought I had a great week until I saw everyone else's scores and realized that, geez, I was a little bit short on the numbers, but pretty happy with my side. I'm sure we'll talk about players shortly, but yeah, really happy with how it came together. And I think I've nailed a few of the key rookies and hopefully not too many correction trades required.
Yeah, definitely more about flagging red flags and correction trades than it is your score in the first week. It's only 1 week of data, as OC has been repeated multiple times on Twitter in the last 48 hours. Good to remind ourselves of that. And Donk, how'd you go?
Had a pretty good week, Marcus. I think I beat you by 8 points, which is always nice. 23-1-8. So ranked about 15,000th. I think I'd take that most round ones, because often you can get that 50,000-60,000K ranking at the start of the year, but most selections went all right. I think we've only got a couple of differences between our sides, which was a bit disappointing.
You copying me has really paid dividends for you, so well done, well done. 23-10, as you mentioned, you beat me by 8 points, so a little bit upset about that, but that's okay. I know you traded in a non-playing player, which we do not recommend oftentimes, to take those 8 points. So I'll live with that. Dunny, what was your score in the finish?
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing compared to you guys. I was a 22.06, which previously we were always pretty happy to get sort of 1,800 in of round one, but yeah. 2,200 just doesn't cut it these days. But look, I'm happy with it. I had, as I said, 30 players playing, which, as Marcus and I were going with, get those people on, not trying to scam the extra couple of points just to knock one of us off.
I've got to say, it didn't seem like a couple of points at the time when Hayes scored 124. I didn't think Rochelle and Martin were both going to get over 100 as well.
As you said, Marcus, it's 1 week of information. There's going to be some ups and downs. You know, Carlton aren't going to get to play Richmond every week. A couple of those scores might drop off.
And I got to say, the play that you did take, Mark, in Comben is pretty good for the flexibility with Hayes, Dixon. Yep. And if you are going to take a non-playing player, being able to put them on your rucks to do the loopholes is definitely the spot to be doing it. So even though it's not what we normally recommend, I don't hate the path that you went down in the end. So for this week's show, we're going to go through the games and just talk a little bit about the players on our watch list. So who might potentially you want to trade in or out in another round's time after we get a little bit more data to look at. And then for the Patreon show, we'll take some questions from the community. But in the main show covering each of the games and a bit of the standout. So looking forward to that. Before we get into it, just a call out for our top scorer in our Patreon group is Speedies, a round rank of 550th overall, scored 24.61. So massive score. And in our main Supercoach coach group, Fat Cat scored 24.93 and is ranked 212th overall. So good start from both those two gents in the community. Also want to call out, thank you very much to the patrons that are new subscribers over the last couple of weeks, especially as we led into the lockout. A lot of new subscribers, we have hit an all-time high. So thank you very much for your support. Much, much appreciated. We hope that the content helped you all pick a good starting team. Let's get into the first game, and then we'll go through game by game. First game of the round, and surely the biggest call out there is Christian Petrarca. Another massive performance after the grand final where he kicked goals and racked up a huge amount of the pill. 38 possessions, 24 of which kicks, 9 clearances, 2 goals, 870 meters gained. Humongous. Now, he would have been a bit of a POD heading into the season opener. What do you guys reckon? Is he a guy that you might look at as a bit of a potential must-have? Do you think he's broken into that territory?
I think that the scoring from Demons will be a bit different each week. You've got Oliver and Gorn and a few other players that can take a lot of points. You just can't pick all of those premium midfielders, right? So he did come at a good price. I think that you will be able to get him at a reasonable price during the year, though. Although, yeah, Jeezy looks good.
I think the key with Petrarca is he's just so hard to tag because he's just so strong. So whether that tag goes to him or Oliver, I think most teams would probably look to Oliver.
Max Gorn only scoring the 92 was interesting. Seemed to still get quite a bit of time in the middle, had 34 hitouts, but just didn't score the huge amount of points that we've come to expect. But if you went the set and forget, nothing to necessarily scare you off yet.
I think he had 6 frees against. He was not far off for another big 130-plus game.
Yeah, for people that went something slightly different within the same game, Tim English scored 123 Supercoach points, played the sole ruck. Few people would have traded into that after seeing Martin being a late out. Got to be pretty happy with that, and certainly one for the watch list if he continues playing as the number one ruck. I think post-game, they were talking
you and
about
I both have him, Marcus.
Yeah. The last Patreon show, you didn't quite have him yet. So this is a perfect example of you copying it into my team, but that's all right. I'm glad there's another one of us cheering him on. Interestingly enough, Bailey Smith, 139 points, absolutely dominated one side of the wing, while Adam Treloar was left a little bit lonely on the other side, scoring 79 points. But Treloar did end up in third of the center bounce attendances, which was quite interesting, with Tom Liberatore only attending one of those CBAs. So it will be interesting to see how that moves moving forward. Treloar, I think, is very much still in line as a decent selection for those that picked him.
I'd have to assume that Liber was a matchup based thing because he is probably their best clearance player and you would expect him to be in most CBAs going forward.
I was listening to something today where they said that apparently Liber had COVID recently and whether it was a bit of a hangover from that potentially that he didn't attend all those CBAs. So I'd expect him, like you, Mark, to be in there a lot more often.
All right, we'll move on to the next game. Carlton v Richmond, certainly a lot to look at here. There were 6 players scoring 120 plus, 5, 130 plus. Doherty and Saad had huge games on the half back line. You had 4 midfielders scoring 120 plus. Hewitt, for those that decided to start him, would have been really happy with an initial 131. He still probably did look like the fourth midfielder of the lot of them, but I think he actually started more center bounces than Chera, which was interesting. The test, I guess, will come when Walsh comes back in, but those that started him would be pretty happy with that start. And Patrick Cripps, 30 disposals, 3 goals. Normally it'd be a larger game than 132 points, but had quite a few clangers that worked against him, but people that started with him would be pretty happy with that. I'm not rushing to correction trade into either of them. It'll be interesting how they go against the team that has a little bit more midfield depth. And Tigers really struggled after Dion Prestia went down after 10 disposals in only the first quarter.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see going forward how Carlton perform. The tricky bit is that Cripps and Hewitt offer such great value now. So if you're going to pick them up, you pick them up after round 2 as a correction trade. But you don't get the information of what happens when Walsh comes back before you have to make that decision. If they both perform this well this week, though, they will be a big topic next week, I imagine.
Yeah. Corey Durden, 71 points, playing in the forward line, kicked 2 goals, looked pretty lively. I think coaches would be pretty happy if they ended up picking him as well, although small forward points can be variable, but certainly a good first week. Mitch McGovern, 70 points, copped a little bit of a knock and then seemed to die off a little bit in the last quarter, but was looking pretty good. Took some kickouts as well, which was nice to see, considering, I guess, Doherty and Saad and Co. also playing. Dunny, did you start Mitch McGovern in the end?
Yeah, I did. I started with Mitch McGovern. I was really happy with his game, quite happy with how he was going along. That knock he took, he went for a big screamer, fell down, basically landed on his bum. I suspect he should be good to go for this week. I think at that point, the game was pretty much done when he went off. So there was no real need to put him back in and risk any further injury. So yeah, I think anyone who started with Mitch McGovern would be really happy with what they saw.
Do we have to put an explicit tag on the podcast now that he said bum?
Somebody who wasn't a bum that I think most of us started with, Jaden Short, 109 Supercoach points, had 19 kicks, moved the ball 607 meters. Certainly looks like more of his floor type game. 19 kicks, 2 handballs. That's why we love Jaden Short. Only 21 disposals, so certainly he's got higher scoring in him. Excited to have him in the team. And then Gibkus, I think, did okay. Scored 56, which probably is maybe even high for a Gibkus, but you're playing him to get some playing rookies actually in the back line. So didn't do anything that would warrant him being dropped, which is good. People started Dusty, wouldn't be upset with a 108 first up, but interestingly enough, he actually seemed to play still a reasonable amount of time stationed up forward. So people started him, probably would have been hoping for more of a midfield split. Maybe Dion Prestia going down for a few weeks might help in the short term. To the St Kilda versus Collingwood game, and surprisingly, the highest scorer from the game is Patrick Lipinski, 30 disposals, 1 goal. I think he's a tough super coach selection because he's 300-ish K available in the midfield. I don't know if he's probably done enough at a wing role to warrant sort of rushing him in as a stepladder pick, but anybody that risks starting him would be pretty happy with that start. Dugowie looked pretty good though, 2 goals, 27 disposals. If you started him in the forward line, he looks like he would be firming for even top 4 forward this year if he can keep up that sort of gameplay. Mark, I know you're a bit of a Dugowie fan. Is he one on your watch list?
Dugowie fan, definitely as a player. Let's just differentiate between player and person there. I think that he's really a guy that you want to start because he's quite cheap, so you get a lot of reward for that risk. It'll be interesting to see what he does over the next few weeks. He did play a fair bit of midfield, but he also kicked 2 goals, 3, so definitely a fair bit of time up forward as well. You just couldn't start. There were so many other options in the forward line that it was really hard to start 3 premiums down there. So at this stage, it's going to be pretty tricky to bring someone like that into my side.
It was interesting to see Scotty Pendlebury still get quite a few centre bounce attendances, but he's definitely played some time in the back line. It'll be interesting to see how his time continues to pan out, but wouldn't necessarily be punting on him 100% getting that back line eligibility at this stage. Big talking point from a Supercoach point of view is Jack Hayes, 127 Supercoach points, really looked good playing sort of around the ground as well as the backup ruckman, sort of in that Rowan Marshall role when Ryder's in the team, kicked 3 big goals as well. Will be interesting to see what the dynamic looks like with Ryder returning via the VFL this week. So not somebody I'd rush to correction trade.
Amazing debut from Hayes. 3 goals probably made a really big difference to his score. And it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with Ryder because the Saints generally perform better with Ryder, but Hayes was going to be extremely difficult to drop. Marshall owners would also be pretty happy with that start. I know a lot when Darcy was out, ended up having to go to someone like Marshall, and 124 was a great score from him. And if you're a Marshall owner, you'd also be hoping that Ryder doesn't come back.
Jade Gresham. Now, he's an interesting one. Got scaled up a fair bit. 24 disposals, 2 goals. I think we talked him down a little bit based on this price point, but also mentioned that he still had a reasonable upside. What did you think of Gresham's game? If he plays in the middle and scores another ton, would you be thinking about potentially trading into him?
Yeah, he was someone I looked at, but just didn't really fit my side. Another game like that, absolutely, you have to seriously have a look at him. I definitely want to see him do it more than just once before I buy into him.
Mark, we generally don't talk about trading into these types of price point players. Would Gresham be somebody you make an exception for if he keeps this up?
No, not personally. I think that we didn't start him for a reason. I picked him up in draft because I think that he could still have a really good year, but it's a really, really tricky price point. There's just so many other available forwards. You could pick up Dugowie for an extra 130,000 or whatever, and not everyone's going to have all of the cheap guys that went really well either. So not for me, but yeah, definitely happy with that start.
Mike, my question out of that game, do we need to panic on Crisp just yet?
Great question. Because you've got Crisp, don't you, Marcus?
Yeah, I do. He still attended quite a lot of centre bounces. He was in and around the ball a fair bit, but just didn't get used. I'm definitely not worried yet. Based on the role he played, I was reasonably happy. I think 69 is definitely one of his lowest scores, potentially even lower than any of his scores last year, but still played the right role. And there's not sort of returning midfielders in the Collingwood side. So I'm more than happy to ride him for at least another week before making a decision. I think it'll be interesting if another backline rookie shows up. So we had an injury in the Port Adelaide backline, which might see Sam Skinner come on board, for example. I think the only sort of chance that I have on moving a crisp type play is restructuring to have two rookie defenders on field, and then maybe looking at moving crisp to, you know, a Dangerfield or a Josh Kelly or something like that, and just looking at the price point and the value that you can get in the midfield instead of with crisp. But apart from a restructure, I wouldn't be side swapping him to another defender. Mitch Owen scored 2 points. He only had played 49% time on ground, which is a bit disappointing. Potentially a chance to be dropped, I suppose, with four clangers as well. So a bit of a wait and see, but he might be sort of a Nick Martin or Jack Hayes swap out in the next round, depending on how that goes.
I'm doing that this week.
Why is that this week, Mark?
I just think I might need the trades next week, and I don't really want to use one of my boosts unless I need to. And not having Martin is really obvious, and Owens, it's a long way back from a two-point game. Lots of people had Jack Steele in that game. Definitely underperforming score-wise. Had a few clangers, free kick that went against him. Still had 28 touches and got heaps of dream team. I think he'll be all right going forward.
All right, to the Geelong Essendon game.
Sorry, can we just skip this game?
Don't worry, we'll only be talking about Supercoach points and not the fact that my team completely made yours look inept. But Patrick Dangerfield, 155 points. I'm keen to hear you guys' thoughts on him. He attended all but one centre bounce. And we have seen Paddy score a huge amount of points. He hasn't been fit in a couple of years. He's mid only, which definitely is a bit of a concern, but he's definitely discounted. Like I said, you know, I potentially think about restructuring in my back line if another rookie comes up, and a play like Danger is one that could potentially make his way into my team. Do you think that's a bit of Geelong bias there, or is that right to be looking at that potential upside?
You did mention him as your player you'd most likely want to start in your interview with Al Payton at the Supercoach Day. There's definitely a lot of Geelong bias there. I just think that it's really tricky. There's just so many awesome midfielders this year that it's hard to have them all, and you have to give way on some of them. I'd be very surprised if Danger went back to 125 plus and played 20 plus games.
And sorry, Mark, but Geelong did have a pretty easy run. Essendon didn't put up any opposition. As you said, I can't see Danger doing that week in, week out, and dropping down to more around the 100 sort of mark is where I see him. He is an older body. He's not going to attend all but one centre bounce too often. He's going to spend more time up forward.
Tyson Stengel's an interesting one. He had 4 goals, 3 behinds, 20 disposals, 120 Supercoach points. Talked him down as a small forward. Is prone to potentially having a game out of the bag like this. If he has another big bag and presents as a step ladder option, I think he might tempt some people into his selection. I'm probably still not looking at him, but it will be interesting to see what that looks like if he has another big score and a potential big price increase as a early step ladder player.
Yeah, I think he did it in the preseason. He had a really big game as well then.
Yep.
So it's not totally one out of the bag.
To the Bombers, Nick Martin looks like an absolute lock. He's bought himself some job security there. 5 goals, 27 possessions, 114 Supercoach points. And I think importantly, beyond just how he's played, there's also been injury news with Kyle Langford also going out. I think Will Snelling apparently with some injury news. So on the job security front as well, probably done enough to say that an early side swap, if you're thinking you might need 3 trades next week, is definitely not off the table.
Yeah, I think Snelling's listed as 1 to 2, but Martin, if he had 27 and 5 goals, unless he's sore or gets injured, you just cannot see him being out of that side in the next 5 weeks. Like, he would have to have 5 possession games for the next 5 weeks to be dropped. So whether he goes on and scores ridiculous amounts or not is yet to be seen. At 102,000, it doesn't take much for him to earn money.
Yeah, he's the one rookie that I did miss, and he'll be coming to my side this week as well.
Caldwell ended up with 23 disposals and 2 goals. So anyone who ended up starting him would be reasonably happy with that start.
He looked all right too. It's just he keeps leading up to the ball and taking marks 45 meters out and doesn't seem confident kicking from 45. Could have had a few more goals if he was a bit more confident kicking from that distance.
And then last player maybe to talk about, Jordan Ridley, 17 possessions, 68 Supercoach points. seem to still have to play a little bit defensively despite Jake Kelly joining the team. The ball obviously entered the Essendon backline a little bit, so people who started him probably wouldn't be too happy with that initial start. Mark, can you pin the reason on anything in particular or just a poor game?
Well, I think that Laverde going down for over a quarter didn't help because it meant that he had to play a more defensive role for part of the game. Wasn't taking the kick-ins as much as we'd hoped, which is something that we predicted on the podcast during the preseason and something that he probably needs in order to score really well. The other side is, though, that Essendon were terrible. Geelong were fantastic, and the ball was just coming in with so much heat and so constantly that it was hard for any of the Bombers defenders to do well. We were losing the ball up the ground. It was an up the ground problem, not a Ridley problem.
All right, to the GWS Sydney game. Isaac Heaney scored 141 points, 25 disposals, 3 goals. Heaney's always been capable of this, probably still continue to play the same amount of percentage time up forward. So I don't think it's a game where you immediately have huge regrets not bringing him in, but certainly a huge start from him. Dunny, did you start him in the end?
No, I didn't end up starting Heaney, and yeah, there was a little bit of regret when I saw his score just keep ticking over and ticking over. But I just say, yeah, he does have these big gains in him, but he just sometimes he can drop away as well. So I'm not too worried about it at the moment, but he's certainly one that I'm keeping an eye on over the next few weeks. That if one of my step ladders needs to be cashed in, he could be one that moves on to.
Heaney or DeGoey, if you were looking at a restructure in the correction trade week after the first round of data, how would you call that?
I'd probably be on the Heaney train, I think. He's less likely to do himself an injury, as DeGoey's had, you know, injury issues in the past. Also less likely to get in trouble off field as well, but we'll see how that all pans out. What about you, Mark? Where would you head?
Yeah, I'd have Heaney as well. He was probably the last guy out of my team when I set up a structure that couldn't have a third premium forward. Unless you're restructuring, it's going to be really hard to bring these guys in. It's not as if, like, everyone's got Dunkley and Butters. It's not as if either of them are likely to get dropped from your team unless they get hurt in the next week. So despite the fact that some of these guys are looking good, it's an opportunity cost. Like, you can't have everyone. Mm.
And I think most of the mid-prices performed pretty well with Brody, McGovern, and Zeri. So it's unlikely that there'll be a trade-up happening. It will be interesting to see what another week of data brings. Lockie Whitfield probably was a little bit disappointing with 21 disposals and 73 Supercoach points. I think, Mark, you mentioned seeing him spend some time on the half-forward line. I think that happened in the last quarter, which certainly wasn't ideal. Wonder whether sort of any niggle played a bit of a role in that. Certainly on the watch list, I'm more concerned about Whitfield potentially than Crisp based on role, I guess, and seeing Whitfield played a little bit out of position.
Yeah, he has always been pretty role dependent. I think the issue thing with Whitfield is though his upside is just so high and you're only paying 500,000 for him. So I would want to see 5 weeks of data before I'd be willing to jump off. But that, I know that's not really how it works. You jump off after second round. I'd be very reluctant to jump off Whitfield, I think.
All right, the next game, Lions versus Power. Dan Houston, 144 Supercoach points and 10 coaches votes. Still available in the back line. Not a very highly selected player. Dunny, what's going on there? Should we have been paying more attention?
Where was this information in the preseason, Dunny? Come on.
Well, I kept it all to myself, guys, but then I didn't start him either. Houston's an interesting one. He does have these big games in him, and he can score really well, but he just doesn't or hasn't shown in the past any consistency at that high scoring level. And that does worry me. And if he is off the half back line, as you know, Port have got a heap of half back players, which we're going to need to use now with a few injuries coming up. But I wouldn't be jumping into him based on this performance. I'd want to see, as you said a couple of times, 4 to 5 weeks worth of data before I bought into Houston.
Zach Butters with a 114 was a nice start.
Just on Butters, copped a bit of a head knock. Is he going to be all right, Dunny?
I'm hearing nothing to say that he won't be. In the news tonight, they said there was a lot of Power players trained away from the main group and just did a little bit on the side, but I don't think his name was mentioned.
Jackson Mead was an interesting one. I think Owens, Pop, and Soligo potentially all a little bit under job security threats need. Did he do enough to potentially be the winner out of that lot after the first game?
Yeah, I think he did. We copped a couple of injuries during the game. I think he's probably done enough to earn a couple of weeks.
On the Brisbane side, Jared Berry only scored the 67 Supercoach points. Didn't do a lot in the second half, but off 260K, probably showed enough to not be too concerned about that particular pick. Daniel Rich only scored the 71 Supercoach points. He was listed on the injury list as a test with a hip as well, but is likely to be available for the next game. Donk, I know you started Rich in the end based on the high upside. And Zorko started taking a few kick-ins, which you probably wouldn't have liked to see. What's the download on Daniel Rich?
Rich looked fine. Once he copped that hip, his scoring went down really significantly. So I think that it was just he was pretty sore rocking through that second half, and that affected his scoring significantly. Just a bit of bad luck there, I think, and I'm still pretty happy with that pick. I think Barry's the interesting one because he was as dominant as anyone that you could see in that first quarter. He was like literally just at every single stoppage or contested ball, and scored 44 points in the first quarter, I think, and then really, really slowed down, was barely on the screen, and picked up a bit of a shoulder injury and is listed as a test this week. So yeah, hopefully he's all right.
I think the news is that he looks like he should get up for the next game, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. On to the Hawks v North Melbourne game.
Marcus, can I just jump back to that one?
Yep.
Just wanted to, you off the top, you mentioned Sam Skinner. All reports are he will definitely come in for Alir this week, who had ankle surgery yesterday. He'll be one that you could replace a defensive rookie with if you needed to.
And he's a DPP as well, so definitely looking like a tempting correction trade. Well, not correction, but a downgrade option in the backline potentially next week.
Can I just, while we're on the subject of backline rookies, De Koning had a concussion in the end. Looked okay in that first half. So he's going to miss this week. You think he'll come back into the side after that, Marcus?
Yeah, I think he certainly did enough. There is some question in terms of returning backline players like Jeb Buse, Mark O'Connor. They're all scheduled to come back. But he played a taller defensive role, and I think he'll likely continue in that role moving forward. So I'm not particularly concerned at this stage. I thought he showed enough before he went down injured. On to the Hawks v North Melbourne game. Kind of wish I traded into Aaron Hall instead of Jack Crisp after only one round of information, but hopefully that reverses that extreme sort of score discrepancy. 129 points, 31 disposals, 870 meters gained. Hall had an absolute monster of a game. Interestingly enough, I think the player that is most tempting, though, rather than Aaron Hall, is actually Lukey McDonald. And he had an absolute premium season before an injury-affected one. Luke McDonald scoring 140 Supercoach points, 24 disposals, 12 marks. Now, he's available in the midfield at about 300-ish K, but if he continues playing this way, he will get that backline eligibility. So he's probably an interesting one in terms of a watch list. If he keeps this sort of scoring up, he may be a player that you look at trading into next week because he has top six average potential in his prior scoring history.
He definitely does. Definitely one to keep a watch on next week. I love footy and I love Supercoach, but I could not bring myself to watch North Melbourne Hawthorn, so not going to be much help on this game.
Probably the only thing for me was really those Hawks rookies, McDonald and Ward. McDonald having a pretty decent game with the 16 touches. Ward just the 13 after that massive game in the Amy series, but did come off with a bit of an injury. I don't know too much about that one though. Marcus, do you know much about his injury?
No, I don't. I think he got wraps on his gameplay, though, in terms of how he continued to sort of run throughout the day. So I think job security is fine pending the niggle, which is good. But scoring is obviously not what we'd hoped for after a huge 120, probably looking like a little bit more of a slow burn rookie. And at 180K, you know, if you did want to restructure, he's potentially a guy that you could sort of trade up to a McDonald type, for example, after only 36 points in his first real AFL game, and with Warple and O'Meara and Mitchell all in the same team. So it was closer to the scratch match score than it was the practice match score, where a lot of those big midfielders was out. So it's a bit unfortunate.
I definitely want to get some more information on him, because I've seen rookies in the past have really poor first games, and he's shown that he can post 100-plus scores, and wouldn't surprise me if he did that at some stage. So I definitely want to get a bit more information on Ward before jumping. Copped an ankle knock, is not on the Hawks injury list.
I think Tristan Jarry is probably one of the interesting topics from the weekend. He ended up playing the starting ruck, was attending the most hitouts compared to Goldstein. I think it was 46 to Goldstein's 35. They were obviously too tall though moving forward, so there will be question marks in terms of which of Goldstein, Jerry and CCJ survives, I reckon, the next team sheets. But based on Coleman Jones's first performance, there is a chance, a good chance, that CCJ is the one that's dropped of the three so far. But long time job security, not super, but the role that he played, Jerry, was fantastic in that first round. All right, last one before we move off this game. James Sicily scored 105 points, 27 disposals. I think was listed in the team of the week, did look particularly good in his return game. Obviously, you'd like even higher scoring from Sicily. I think there were a few clangers there that contributed to a slightly worse score, considering 538 meters gained and 27 disposals, but certainly a good first innings from those that decided to take the risk at 440K.
Yeah, pretty happy with that selection at the moment.
Yep.
All right, on to the Crows v Dockers game, and we have the competitor for that Jerry spot in Will Brody, probably being one of the conversation points. Was looking on track to beat Jerry, but ended up getting stuck on the bench for 20 minutes. Seemed to be a little bit of a bad luck situation with him being caught, not being able to transition onto the ground. But we did expect lower time on ground from Brody, based on the fact that I don't think he's a super runner, but he's a great inside player. Probably still did enough to be reasonably excited from how he's started his career. Frio, I think Longmuir talked him up a little bit, and he attended enough center bounces that you'd hope he keeps that up even if Fife returns. You both Brody owners?
Yep. Yeah, I'm a Brody owner.
Not super impressed by his game. Like, he did have that good inside game and good around the center bounces, but didn't do a heap on top of that. Definitely noticed him get stuck on the bench. I don't know whether that was fitness-based or performance-based, because they really did want to run with, it looked like they wanted to run with Brayshaw, Sarong, and Mundy in those stoppages at the end, just because they were so important, those last four or five centre bounces. So, yeah, a bit of a wait and see on Brody at the moment.
As someone who goes to Adelaide Oval quite regularly, you'd be surprised how often the ball does get stuck on that outer side. I stand over on the bench side, and we're always sure that most of the plays on the outer. So, yeah, it's realistic that he could get stuck there for that 20 minutes. But, yeah, disappointing. But I guess it shows that with that score for 65% time on ground, if he can boost that up to sort of an 80%, his score should be looking quite healthy.
Another interesting one was Mitch Hinge, scored 50 points. I guess I got an interesting question. I only have one rookie on field, and I fielded Hinge ahead of McCartan. Which way would you gents recommend I go for game two, Hinge or McCartan?
I would probably go McCartan. I just sort of liked his game a little bit more. I just trust McCartan scoring a little bit more.
Hinge did pick up a knock during the game, which seemed to impact his scoring, and it was fairly early on. But I was sort of expecting him to play a bit more up the ground, and he did seem to play a bit more of a defensive back pocket role than I was hoping for.
Soligo had five disposals, played 63% time on ground, and I think Laird is listed as a test, although he might get worked back in.
Talk tonight on the news was that Laird is pushing hard to play this week.
So I reckon Soligo could potentially be a little bit at risk in terms of job security there. On to the West Coast v Gold Coast game, and thank God we all started Matty Rowell on this show, didn't we?
We did.
Didn't work last year, but thank God it paid off this year.
Yeah, 157 Supercoach points, contested monster, 22 contested possessions, 9 clearances, massive game. Tuke Miller as well, a few people would have captained him playing against an undermanned West Coast, 137 Supercoach points, 29 possessions and a goal was great to see.
Witts was the other interesting one from that game, 127. I know a lot of people did go down that track because he was under 400K. Very risky selection, I think, but really great start considering he was up against Nick Nat in the ruck and managed to score really well, having a pretty good midfield roving to him. So it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out as well.
On the West Coast side of the fence, Brady Hoff was probably the main one to look at. 10 disposals, but a lot of West Coast players potentially coming back this week. So it will be interesting to see whether or not he holds his spot. Will be interesting to see if all of those midfield rookies ended up getting dropped after just one game. So it'd be interesting to see that. Hugh Dixon, I think, is another one whose spot is potentially a little bit at risk with Jack Darling slated to return. I think he probably showed enough in the first game to feel a little bit bad if he does lose his spot. So we'll be watching with intent.
Interestingly,
with the returning players, yeah.
Interestingly, Mark, 96% time on ground for Dixon, which is pretty huge for a rookie, to be honest. But at the moment, he's looking like the one who's going to make way for Martin in my side.
Wow.
All right. So that's all the games covered from this round. Just go around the table in terms of the play that you're most keeping a close eye on in round two for your potential inclusion in Correction Trade Week.
That's a tricky one. I don't have anyone in particular. I don't really see myself restructuring. It's probably, I'm mainly looking at rookies. I'd like to just back my side in and not take any premium changes. I guess the Carlton boys, because they provide value, are the ones that potentially are interesting to watch.
I'll be very keenly looking at, you know, say, the rookies to see how they go, but also looking at that Crisp v. Hewitt matchup next week to see if that's a round two correction trade that could free up a bit of cash in my side.
I think for me, it's Lukey McDonald. I think from the price point and potential to finish in a top position, he's the one that I'll be most tempted by, but that's a price point that's tough to navigate in the midfield especially, so we'll see how we go. All right, and with that, we'll sign off for the week. All the best sitting on your hands. I think has been reiterated, the only time that you might be considering a trade is if you don't want to use your trade boost next week, which you absolutely shouldn't strategically, and you want to make an early, obvious correction trade. So if Owens gets dropped, moving him to a Nick Martin, for example. And with that, we will sign off and catch you all for a big week next week in Correction Trade Week. Thanks, Jets, for joining us for the show.
See you, everyone.
See ya.